friends, welcome to the Modern Mamas Podcast. We're here to provide a safe space for open dialogue, insights, and anecdotes about empowered pregnancy, labor, delivery, parenthood, and everything in between, with zero judgment and open hearts and minds. I'm Jess, a level one CrossFit trainer and a licensed and certified athletic trainer. I have my master's in kinesiology, and I'm currently studying to be a certified nutrition consultant and a birth fit coach. I'm the blogger behind Hold the Space Wellness, as well as a mama to two small kiddos.
And I'm Laura, a certified CrossFit trainer, certified nutrition consultant, Birth Fit Santa Cruz regional director, and mama to Evie Wilder. I'm also the owner of Radical Roots. Head over to myradicalroots.com to find recipes, insights, and nutrition consulting. Please note that while we're here to provide advice and insights, we aren't medical practitioners and always recommend that you check with a trusted provider before implementing any changes. Thanks for joining us. We're so happy you're here.
We had so much fun with Liz, we had to split her episode into a part four. For a quick recap on who this amazing woman is, Liz is a health and wellness writer and nutritional therapy practitioner with a passion for real food, safe skincare, and healthy babies and families. Her work includes the Wall Street Journal bestseller, Eat the Yolks, and the Purely Primal Skincare Guide. She also co-created the online pregnancy and parenthood community, Baby Making and Beyond, set to launch in 2017. She blogs at realfoodliz.com and co-hosts the Balanced Bites podcast. In her spare time, she chases her rambunctious toddler around her hobby farm. This episode, we talk all about skin issues, personal care products, parenting, and discipline. We hope you enjoy it. Got some really good questions about skin issues slash like products, which I know like this is another one of your fortes. But Kind Mama Bear asks, if there's any recommendations you would suggest for eczema in a 12-month-old. They've eliminated all grains, dairy, eggs. They're drinking fresh coconut and cucumber water, tons of veggies, making homemade lotions and soaps, toxin-free living. Mama is breastfeeding and drinking green smoothies for detox, but they still have not had much eczema relief. What are your thoughts?
So I should have said this to the last question too, to Ashley, but I think it's always worth incorporating a good probiotic to see if that has any effect on your kiddos. I've heard people talk about how it helps with food intolerances as much as eczema, which can be a manifestation of a food intolerance. And I also should have said for Ashley, like body work for the kiddos can sometimes be really helpful with like food intolerances.
Chiropractic care is what you're
saying? Yes. Yeah. Yes, chiropractic care, and even sometimes craniosacral, depending on the practitioner. I cannot explain why, but I've seen it help. So as far as these skin issues, okay, first off, I would definitely evaluate whether anything in the external environment could be causing the eczema. Our situation, I think my kiddo, this is probably closer to when she started being a little bit more mobile and crawling, and we'd put her on the floor and we'd put her on the couch and things like that. And she slowly started to develop these like eczema patches, and our pediatrician thought it was eczema. And I was like, how is this possible? I've done everything right. I'm, you know, doing exactly what Kind Mama Bear is doing. And what we realized was it was basically what happened was she fell asleep on the carpet one day with her cheek on the carpet. And when she woke up 30 minutes later, because she was on 30 minute naps at that point, her entire cheek was like inflamed. And I realized, like, holy crap, I think this is the carpet. I think it's the carpet in our upholstery. So we covered the couch, we covered the carpet with a big cotton blanket. And within 2 or 3 weeks, it completely resolved. And I think that happens with a lot of folks. I think a lot of it is environmental for some people. So check on that. The other thing that I have discovered recently that now I'm connecting back to a ton of stuff in my kid's infancy is that she does not tolerate essential oils well at all. And I had been using them on her fairly regularly, particularly when she would get like bug bites and little irritated patches. I would use therapeutic grade lavender oil. Like I was using the good stuff, and even lavender oil she would react to. So here I'm thinking she has these horrible problems and I'm putting lavender all over it to make it better, and come to find out that lavender was actually making it worse. She doesn't do well with citrus essential oil. Her system is just like really fine tuned, and those are incredibly concentrated and incredibly strong. And for some kids they are amazing, and for other kids they are not. So if you can get rid of anything, you know, that resembles like essential oil type, highly concentrated plant compounds in the homemade lotions and the soaps and things like that, I think that would probably be worth trying in addition to like the probiotic and the food strategies. I love Primally Pure because they do, and you can do this at home too, rather than using essential oils, they use like herbs that are actually, what's the word for the herb in the oil? Infusion?
Yes.
Is that what it is?
Okay. Herb infused.
They do that, and they use, I think, calendula, which I feel like calendula smells like feet, but it's pretty, it still smells pretty good. Whatever she's doing over there at Primally Pure, it's working. So their stuff is really good. This is a point where I know we want to think that natural is always best, but for some reason, I feel like kids are really sensitive these days. It might just be the assault from the environment and things like that. I don't know. They seem to be sensitive to things, but sometimes, safe synthetics are more effective than natural methods. And I hate that I have to say that. But my example is we had a horrific diaper rash that got infected, that skin got incredibly weak. It would bleed like if you barely touched it. And it was this awful, awful process. We tried everything. We had to use a topical antibiotic. When we were finally off of that, I started using some like hydrosols and some really, really, really low concentration, like essential oil, homemade stuff. Nothing, no avail. The only thing that helped was calmoseptine, and that completely resolved it within 2 weeks. Yeah. And that's like calamine and, you know, a bunch of other stuff that they use on bed sores. So,
well, it's like, it's with that, the same thing that we always like kind of promote here is like, if you are for the most part living a clean life 24/7 and you are treating, like you're using non-toxic products, this is kind of going off of the eczema thing, but using non-toxic products and eating like 80% of your food is like amazingly sourced. If you have to do a short-term, you know, treatment on your little girl's booty to get her out of pain, it's, you know, it's over the span of her lifetime, it's probably going to be okay. You know, you've got to do what works. It's like, you can try all the other stuff, and if it doesn't work, it's like, it's okay.
Oh my gosh. I'm so glad you said that. So I have another quick story. Mm-hmm. My daughter put on this disgusting polyester coat that was gifted to her, and it didn't touch her body, but it touched her wrists, right? It was like a fake fur coat. And her wrists erupted in like the worst rash I've ever, like this irritation. And it was like, it wouldn't go away for weeks. And our pediatrician, who is very holistically minded, she's an MD, but she's very holistic. She prescribed us a really strong steroid. And I spent days just agonizing over, no, oh, I don't use a steroid. This is the side effects of a steroid. This is too strong, blah, blah, blah. And finally, I had exhausted everything else. And I finally was like, I can't look at these wrists anymore. This is stressing me out more than it is stressing her out, but I can't look at them anymore. And so I used the damn steroid. And within a week and a half, it had completely cleared up and it hasn't come back.
Right.
Like, it's okay.
It's okay.
Really?
Yeah. We've had this conversation before. I don't know if it was with you, Laura, about something else, but it was like very similar. It's like, I think a reader or listener asked about steroid use, you know, not wanting to use it. And it's like, we basically said the same thing.
Yeah. We live in a time and age where I think people are sometimes too quick to use like synthetics or antibiotics or medicines as a quick fix. But we also live in a time where it's beautiful that we have those things mm-hmm. and we need them. So I think it's like finding a balance of what are your options and making sure you know those, but then when is it time to use that stuff to make your life better or your child's life better?
Totally.
Yeah. That's kind of how I feel about it.
Totally.
Polyester coat required, like synthetic coat required synthetic.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny. Okay. That was a great one. Gage Girl D asks about ticks. How do you protect your daughter from ticks being on the farm? Most products are so toxic. Do you have any safe but effective products? And tick, the word tick just like,
I just
freaked
when
me
I was,
out.
When I was like 10 years old, I went on a hike with my dad in like a big t-shirt and sweatpants. And I found 12. None of them had bit me. My dad was like pulling them out of, they were in my hair was down, like pulling 12 total, not a single one bit, but I was scarred, like legitimately scarred. I cannot even handle the thought of them. I see spiders. I'm like, disgusting. Rusty, is that a tick? Like, no, it's a spider. Count the legs.
Anything that moves. Yeah. Any like dark spot. Yeah. Yeah. I've gotten a lot better about my fear of ticks because I was forced to. It was literally exposure therapy for the first couple years at the farm. And my daughter has had two ticks attached to her recently, not recently, but at the beginning of this season, the ticks kind of came out a little earlier than expected. One of them was in her ear, like up here, like where we used to get our ears pierced up there.
Yeah.
So we use Cedarside, which is really effective, but it smells like cedar. And some people, have trouble with that.
Dogs.
But it totally works.
Yeah.
Okay. What about dogs?
We use that on our dogs.
On your dogs.
Yeah, it works.
That's cool. I've never heard of it before. That's awesome.
It totally works. Make sure you get the real things. I think it should be at cedarside.com, but they have something called Tick Shield, which we use.
Okay. That was a short, sweet answer. I like it. And then,
well, wait, I should tell you one more thing.
Okay, go for
sometimes
it.
Sometimes, like if we take a hike in the woods by like my parents' house, we do have a loose cotton romper with long pants that I have sprayed with permethrin, which is a synthetic and it's chemical and it's like toxic to fish. You know, it's one of those, but it binds to the cloth rather than on her skin. So it's not DEET, but the permethrin basically binds to the clothing and anything that touches it, it kills it.
So it's like a shield for her, but not like,
it is like a little shield.
Yeah. I like it.
We have done that.
Okay. Very cool. So like if they're going to be in a very tick heavy environment, and you want
totally
extra, yeah, extra protection. Yeah. Awesome. CB Miller asks, Liz, you use the Beauty Counter Kids. Have you used the Beauty Counter Kids body wash, shampoo, conditioner with your little one? And if so, what are your thoughts, particularly with hair that tangles easily and sensitive skin? And I have two cents with this too, but you know, go for it.
So my quick, I'll be curious to hear your thoughts. Yeah. We still use the baby wash, which I love. For her, she has kind of thin, fine hair, and it's kind of long, kind of mullety. But we haven't had a huge problem with, like, tangling easily. I could see how that would be an issue because there's no conditioner with it. Mm-hmm. But I just tried using the Beauty Counter Kids line for her just because I had so much of it laying around. And she actually does not do well with it. Her hair feels great, but as I mentioned before, she seems to be sensitive to essential oils, and there's some citrus in it. And I found that she was getting little patchy spots, like, mm-hmm. all over her head that were itching her. And I stopped using them, and those went away. So I think it's great. I know a lot of people who like it, but it's not for us.
Right. And we have the opposite, but Bear has never been sensitive to, like, I guess, external, like, stuff, essential oils or any of that stuff. We use the kids line for him. He has really curly hair that's like,
it's so sticky cute.
He has awesome hair. But it's actually really long. It just looks short because it's super duper, like, tight curls. And it's amazing. Yes. Tim has curly hair when it's long. Tim's mom has super duper curly hair.
That's so cute. Awesome.
I know. Sorry, wish I had his hair.
That's awesome.
But we love it. He doesn't have any problems with it at all. We also use the baby line for Camille. The products last forever. Like literally we have been using the baby body wash since she was born, and it's not anywhere close to being done. But we also wash her like once a week with it. And most of the time it's like a water bath when, you know, every day we kind of like let her splash in the water. But we've had no problems with it. We love it.
And Jess got me the booty cream, mm-hmm. and we've used two different kinds, another one, and then the Beauty Counter. And Beauty Counter seems to be a little bit better in terms of, her any sort of rash. She doesn't have like full blown diaper rash, but a little bit of, like, you can see it's like kind of pink and a little sensitive, and that seems to work really well. So, mm-hmm.
And
she only had one bath ever, but we used some local like lavender thing that seemed to do. I haven't used the Beauty Counter stuff yet.
We used for Camille because it's like with Bear, every time he would wake up at night, I would change his diaper, and he would wake up like 10 times at night. And looking back on it, because I was like super freaked out about rashes. Looking back on it, I probably created some like poor sleep patterns just because like I would like fully wake him up every time, you know, he would wake up with the diaper change. So with Camille, we were like, the best advice we ever got was like, don't change your baby at night unless there's poop there. Like, it's going to be irritating. Yeah. So we would load her up with the Beauty Counter booty cream. And she has, knock on wood, have never had a diaper rash.
That's amazing.
A year into it. So I don't know. They're doing something right over there. And we're all Beauty Counter consultants, right? Like, so we all believe in the products, I think, for the most part.
Yeah.
So, cool. Anything else to add on any skin issue product questions?
I don't think so.
Okay. So we're at the point where we're actually doing pretty good. If we want to tackle these parenting ones, I don't know if you guys have time. Do y'all want to just go for it or do you want to table them?
I'm good.
Okay, cool. All right. We're all good. We'll keep on going. So these are going to be interesting. So these are about parenting, discipline, you know, parenting decision stuff. The first one, Miranda Elaine. So she posted this in your parenting group, but she would love to hear your thoughts as well. How do you deal with an 18-month-old hitting and headbutting her when she's mad? If she doesn't let her have something or do something, she gets super mad at me. And during her rage fit, she hits me or headbutts. I currently move her away from me and tell her that I won't let her hit me, but it doesn't seem to be making a difference. I don't want to stifle her emotions. I want her to work them out, but just without being physical towards me or anyone else. It's heartbreaking. Also, we don't hit her and she stays at home with me. So I honestly don't know where any of this is coming from. I'm super interested to hear what you're going to say.
I'm looking at this next question and I'm wondering if my, no, okay. It's going to be different. Okay. So I come from an aware parenting perspective, and I know there are other compassionate ways to deal with this type of thing, but I think aware parenting is kind of the best approach for really getting at the root of these things. You know, there are approaches that will suggest different ways to deal with that energy, like a biter needs some kind of oral approach, you know, that type of thing. Like there are still compassionate ways to deal with this, but aware parenting is kind of really like digging in there and getting at the root, that the good, bad, and the ugly. And it can be ugly sometimes. Mm-hmm. But one of the approaches that gets thrown out there a lot in my parenthood group is the Rye approach, RIE. And I don't, you know, want anybody to be dogmatic about anything. I want people to trust their gut. But the Rye approach is very useful in that it advocates like very unruffled, very calm methods of discipline that I think are really, really useful. So when I hear someone say, my child is doing this, and when she does that, I say, I won't let you hit me. You know, it still allows space for them to get some feelings out if they need to, but it's that feeling of, I'm going to set boundaries to keep you safe. And I think that's really, really important. Where I think Rye is kind of limited, I was actually introduced to Rye before I was introduced to aware parenting. That was kind of the progression for me. But where I think Rye is limited is that they don't really think in the way that aware parenting does about the root of these strong emotions and how they are being translated and funneled through the body. And kids deal with strong feelings and tension and rage and stress in ways that don't necessarily seem to be related on the surface. But a lot of these things are kind of part of the same continuum. So a kid that bites might be dealing with the same feelings as a kid that hits or headbutts or kicks or what have you, you know, hurts the dog, whatever it is. So a lot of these things are coming from the same place. And I think the slight shift that maybe could happen here is setting those loving boundaries to keep the child safe, because you don't want to be hit or butted.
But Laura's an English major. What is it?
No idea. I don't know. So you want to set those boundaries and keep her safe, but while still saying, I'm going to keep you safe, but I'm also going to give you a really safe space to get this out and work through it. And you'll also need to be aware that sometimes that takes time. Sometimes it takes days, sometimes it takes weeks, but children don't want to headbutt, hit their heads. It's not just a phase. It's not just something you should ignore, like a lot of people tell you. It's a sign that they are asking you for help in channeling and releasing strong feelings. So whether or not you can pinpoint the source, whether it's stress at daycare or just developmental stress or whatever it is, stockpiled emotions, they're basically asking you for help getting rid of them. And so what I would do is, I think it's appropriate to set those boundaries and say, you know, I don't want to be hit, but at the same time, you also don't want to scare your child by implying that they have the power to hurt you, because, and I don't know how developmentally appropriate or not appropriate that is, but I think a lot of times when kids feel they have that kind of power, it really scares them even more. So it's a really delicate balance, obviously, but it is appropriate to set boundaries. And you don't even have to set those boundaries with words. You can set them with your body. So if you kind of know how she usually engages in these rage fits, there are ways to kind of contain that energy, whether that's within, you know, like your arms, kind of giving them a space to keep them in, like basically saying, I'm going to keep you safe right here close to me. That doesn't mean keeping them in a really tight hug, but it might mean just using your arms or your legs to set a little bit of a physical boundary that they can push against to physically access those really strong feelings. And I don't know how much that makes sense. And I know it's kind of a tough topic because I'm not talking about like encaging your child in your arms, but I'm talking about sometimes when children make this kind of physical contact, from what I've read, it seems to be kind of a physical plea for accessing those emotions and getting them out. So sometimes kids hit, sometimes they bite, sometimes that strength of feeling is channeled in that way. And it's productive in the moment because it gives them something to do, but it's not actually channeling or giving those feelings a conduit to come out of their bodies. So maybe doubling, not doubling up, but maybe just taking that little shift and finding a way to set boundaries while still really working to dig in and access those feelings and help her get them out.
Yeah. I'm just thinking as you're talking, do you always think that what we would consider bad, quote unquote, behavior, do you always think that is linked to some underlying emotional issue? Or do you ever think that some of that is truly just a developmental thing? Like, I want to hit this person to see what happens, or I'm going to, you know, throw my food on
like
my floor.
Testing boundaries.
Yeah. Like
it.
Testing. Do you ever think that some of that's just a natural thing and that there's not an underlying issue?
Oh, totally. Well, I think so. I'm just thinking, and again, I'm the parent of 1 2-year-old. I don't have this broad range of experiences. So I might be saying these things and people are rolling their eyes like, this is not what's going on. And that's very possibly the case. So I'm thinking back to when my daughter, like, I'll tell her to stop when she's walking towards the street and she just keeps going. Mm-hmm. I don't think that is a momentary need of connection. Like, oh, she's continuing to walk because we've not connected on a deep level today. Yeah. I don't think that's what that is. There are momentary boundary testing things that happen. Or when she throws her food on the floor or gives it to the dog and I ask her not to and she does it anyway. My first response is not going to be, hey, what's going on in there? Like, are you all right? Do we need to connect? But my response is also not going to be punishing. It's going to be, okay, you're telling me that right now we need to not be playing outside. So I'm going to pick you up and take you inside. And then maybe then that's going to piss them off so much that they connect to some deep-seated rage that needs to get out and we'll have a big release. Sometimes kids are hinging some of this need for release on little things that are not a big deal. So she's throwing her food and she won't stop despite what I say. And I tell her, okay, you're telling me that this food needs to be cleaned up and we'll eat later. Generally, that can go one of two ways. Okay, I'm on to the next thing. Like, you showed me that there's a boundary. I'm cool with that. Now I'll move on to the next thing. Other times that will lead to a huge tantrum and that's where you access those feelings. And that's where you're like, cool, the boundary I set enabled them to have a bigger release. It had nothing to do with me taking the food away or not letting them walk into the street, but that was the little thing that they hinged those big feelings on. Right. And now she's getting them out. I welcome tantrums. I really do. I think they're wonderful. And I think a lot of times, you know, this boundary is appropriate, but maybe asking yourself whether the boundary you're setting is helping to access deeper feelings or whether it's just kind of like, you know, putting a stop on something that's going to need to come out eventually.
Yeah, I love that. That's amazing. And then my other question, I'm like kind of hijacking this because I have so many questions. So like, for instance, with aware parenting, like you really want to be present with the kiddo, right? When they're feeling these emotions. Well, with two, sometimes that's not possible. You've got, you know, an infant and you've got a raging three-year-old, you know. Number one, you want to keep the three-year-old safe. You want to keep the baby safe. You want to keep yourself safe. And, you know, it's not my first choice, but, you know, occasionally we have to put a bear in his room by himself to, and I don't tell him you need to stop crying. I tell him it's okay to cry. I can't sit with you right now, but you're going to have to go to your room so that you're safe. And so again, I'm not a perfect parent and I don't know everything about aware parenting and I'm learning this as I go, but like, I wonder, when is that acceptable? You know, is that,
I think that's great.
Okay. Cause I'm just like, am I doing damage? Cause I can't spend an hour with him while he rages like every time.
You know? No, I think it's see, those are like the really like reasonable boundaries that I think are important. Like for you to say, I need you to stay safe and I need to keep your sister safe. And I love you. I'm here for you, but I'm going to keep you safe. And this is how I can do it in this moment. Totally appropriate. You can always say like, I can't be with you now, but I will be with you later. And maybe later on you'll see him, you know, engaging in behaviors that indicate to you that there's something in there that he's looking for something to hinge him on to get him out. Mm-hmm. Cause a lot of times when kids feel like they have that freedom, they'll look for little things to hinge it on. So maybe, you know, after the little one goes to bed, you'll come back and he'll pull your hair or throw some food or something, you know, and then you can engage in it then. But no, I think that's a great way to do it. And I'm not an aware parenting instructor. I'm not certified, but the sense that I get from aware parenting is that you start from connection. You never start assuming that a kid is just doing something to be bad. And you don't start out assuming that your response in that moment is going to damage them. Right. You just start from like, can we connect now? And if not, when can we connect?
Perfect. I love that. That's great. Great answer. So Lana and Calvin also, so this one, you were kind of alluding to it, you know, wondering if the first two were related, but she has a three-year-old that started screaming at the top of her lungs when she doesn't get her way. Basically, every time we say no, she either says, well, I'm going to just do it for a second, or she screams at the top of her lungs over and over. The mom says sometimes she'll pick her up and hug her and take her to the room to calm down and say, I'll be back. And she just keeps screaming for a few minutes, or she'll beg. I assume much of this is a three-year-old being three, but is it? Do you have any ideas on how to respond? She also does mean things to her 9-month-old brother when I'm out of the room for a minute or two. How can we help her develop empathy? Last thing, she's constantly saying, well, you didn't see me do it, or you were not here, so I did it anyway. Basically, she is okay. This one's a long one. Basically, she's okay with doing things behind our back as long as we don't see them. To her, it is not disobedience. There's a couple issues in there.
Yeah. This is a really tough one for me to answer. I mean, obviously, there's a need in here and we're not 100% sure like how to access it. And these are hard for me because clearly she's very smart. You know, she kind of, has a lot of emotional and intellectual intelligence, and kids will develop empathy through, you know, parental modeling. You can't teach empathy. You can teach it that way, but you can't teach it by like explaining it. You know what I mean? So you just have to, you know, continue with a empathetic parental approach. And I'm guessing there's some stress here going on because of the 9-month-old brother. I mean, I think there are different phases of adjustment. And I can't remember if 3.5 years old is one of them. I can't remember. It might be 3, might be 3.5. And then you add a younger sibling to the mix and it can get even more difficult. But this one is interesting enough and complex enough that I would probably say to check out Marian Rose's work. She's an aware parenting instructor, and she's got some online groups where you might be able to pose your question. Some of the aware parenting groups can get really fuzzy. Like, it's always like, I hear you saying that you're frustrated about blah, 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 because they're very like pro-empathy. And so I'm always like, skip the first paragraph, just get to the strategies. But I think it would be really interesting to connect with an aware parenting instructor about this, because it sounds like this is going to take some thinking about how to access this need. But if you can just focus on that, like just focus on trying to figure that out while keeping the kids safe, I think she will pick up on the fact that you are looking for the way to connect. And I think eventually she will give it away. She'll tell you in one way or another, and you'll be like, oh, I think this is the path. Or you'll figure it out, but just be really, really patient. I know it can feel like you have to fix this in the moment, because the screaming is, ugh, and the hitting and the hurting of the, it's really frustrating, but just shift that mindset to being really, really open to the nonverbal communication, to the spiritual communication that you have with your kid, to see if you can pick up on what might be going on.
Right. That's awesome. And basically just, I don't have any like, you know, I guess scholarly advice on this one, but I've been in pretty much the same boat with a 3-year-old and like a 9-month-old. And I think you were saying like different phases of acceptance too. So like with Bear, initially he was really awesome with his sister and it was cool. It was fun. It was new. And then right around like six months or so, it was like, okay, this kid is like not going away. Like this baby is staying here. And I will never be like alone again. And so we had some, not lashing out. He was really never like physically, you know, abusive or anything like that, but like emotional lashing out, some things that I think kind of stemmed from that. And then again, he worked through, we all kind of worked through it on his own, but, we didn't really go through a lot of the screaming and stuff that she did, or the like behind the back stuff. So I can't really speak to that, but I think like you mentioned, probably a lot of it is stemming from the new kiddo, you know?
Oh, I just thought of something else. Attachment play might be a really good tool here. And that's another one of Aletha Salter's books. SOLTER. And I think the book is just called Attachment Play. That's something that we're just getting into at my house, but that might really help too.
Awesome.
I think we touched on that in your last podcast interview as well. I'm excited to look more into that.
Yeah. We'll definitely put some notes on that in the podcast notes too. Awesome. Okay. A few more. Jay Novi says she knows you stay at home with your little one, but she's curious what you know about vaccination laws. More specifically, this is a whole can of worms here, but
yes, that's what I was gonna say.
We'll see. More specifically, she doesn't plan to vaccinate her child, but she does plan to go back to work after maternity leave. From what she's obtained so far, it appears finding daycare for unvaccinated kiddos is incredibly difficult, which is really disheartening. Any suggestions?
Do we know what state she's in?
It doesn't say.
Because that's going to play into it pretty significantly. California has very, very strict laws.
And just as of recently, right?
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Also so, very strict laws for midwifery that have, they just
so random to me.
Wow.
Frustrating.
That's it's so interesting to me that a liberal, how
it's such a socially liberal state.
Yeah. But liberals are also so legislation happy, and sometimes it just goes, and I am a liberal. I'm very socially liberal.
Yeah.
But it's just interesting how that goes. I don't know. I don't know much about vaccination laws at all. I think even in California, they're not allowing religious exemptions.
No, it has to be medical.
Okay.
So I can share what we're doing.
Yeah.
We haven't decided 100%. I'm going to say that off the bat about vaccinations. And I know we're not going to do everything and we're not going to follow the schedule exactly, but I don't know if we'll do any at this point. I know we will not do any at 2 months. That's just how we feel and how I feel. But we've gotten 2 doctors. So we have like a quote unquote regular doctor, a wonderful woman from our gym, who's a family practitioner. And then we have like a functional medicine doctor who's also an MD. And so we're running an MTHFR test and we're going through like with a fine tooth comb family history. If we find anything that's a red flag, she's going to write an exemption. And if not, then we'll cross that bridge. But that's something if you find a doctor who is open to having the conversation, then and is, you know, I think that's always a good thing to do from the beginning. And then I think every state has medical exemptions.
I believe you're right about that. And yeah, just for the sake of not making this an entirely new show, just leave it there.
Yeah, I think that's good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe we'll do it. Maybe we won't.
Yeah, that's such a hot button topic.
That's why I've talked about it. How I just wish it was something that we could talk about without people losing their minds, but it's not. And so you know,
even what you just said is probably going to make people lose their minds because
on both sides.
Yeah, probably. On both sides. I've shared a teeny tiny bit about this in the parenthood group, but like my hard line is that I support all parents.
Mm-hmm.
The end.
That's how I feel too.
I'm not afraid of my child being around unvaccinated children any more than I think a vaccinated child should be afraid of being around any unvaccinated kids.
Yeah. So
it's just the hysteria is manufactured. That's mm-hmm. the thing. Flat out, I can tell you that for sure. The hysteria is manufactured.
Mm-hmm. I think every parent, whatever decision they make. Oy vey.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to move on from there. Yeah. I think we left it pretty as much as we could go into
it. You might
want
to just move that to the end of the podcast so people don't turn it off yet.
Right. <Let's cut it off. laughs> we'll end. Okay. We've got two more. So Sam from Facebook, she wants to know how Liz is incorporating nutritious movement a la Katie Bowman into her and her daughter's daily habits and activities, or how you plan to, if that hasn't come up yet.
Really,
I don't know anything about this. Yeah, I'm so curious.
I wouldn't say I am incorporating it into my daily habits. I've been in survival mode for quite some time, hoping to come out of that soon. I do try and walk as much as I possibly can and on varying terrain. So that's probably about the best I can do. Sometimes I will kind of do like a mimicking thing with my kid where we're outside and if she squats down, I squat down. If she falls down, I fall down, things like that, just to kind of incorporate some of that natural stuff. Because I need the reminder now, more than ever, but the kiddo, it's pretty natural with kids. If you put them outside and give them some stuff to climb on, they pretty much do that stuff themselves. I would say an interesting tactic would be if you allow your kid to watch TV, which I do, it would be probably good to make them sit on the floor versus in a chair mm-hmm. or something like that. That's about as far as it goes for us right now.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you mentioned the television, but that could probably be a whole nother topic, but
that is the last question.
So screen time, Laura's question. Do you want to elaborate, Laura?
I've got a 5-week-old and at the end of the day, she cluster feeds from 8 to 10 and my husband and I watch a show, or 5 episodes of The Office. And so my question, I guess, is like, I've heard and read some things about little ones and like, especially in their early, early years about screen time. And right now I don't think she has any idea that she's never looked at the TV. But I guess my question is, what are your thoughts on screen time for little ones? And, that's kind of it.
Wow. My thoughts are complex. So like really early on, I think theoretically there could be something to like having the blue light with the kid in the evening. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I would worry about it. I was so controlling about my child not being exposed to screens at all when she was a newborn.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was psycho about it because I felt like everything had been wrenched from my control. And that mm-hmm. was like one thing I could control. So I was a little cuckoo about it. I think what I would do if I were mom watching a show later at night is I would just wear the goggles, the glasses to hopefully, you know, maintain the melatonin production because that gets passed to baby through your breast milk. Mm-hmm. So you want sleepy milk.
I actually did not know that. That's very
isn't that amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very cool.
And I actually don't know, we have research on this in the Baby Making and Beyond vault, but I don't remember what it says. I don't remember at what point during infancy babies start producing their own melatonin or if it's in the womb or not.
I actually am writing an article about this right now.
Ooh.
I think you have it. They have it in their system for up to like 6 weeks from birth. And then I think that melatonin levels don't start to become stabilized till around 12 weeks, which is when like neurologically babies are starting to organize their sleep patterns a little bit more. So I want to say Yeah, around that point.
So after the fourth trimester.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is really, really interesting.
Yeah.
Very cool. So other than that, we started, I wouldn't say she watches a significant amount of TV, but I have used it as a babysitter once or twice while I'm cooking dinner. And although I would love for her to play independently, which she does oftentimes, sometimes I just, it's like we just watch Thomas or puppies or something. Mm-hmm. And I think there might be some value to hearing dialogue amongst different characters because we don't have that village. We don't, our kids are not with, well, stay at home. Our kids aren't with people all day hearing that interaction. So if they go to daycare, if they go to PDO or something like that, they get that a little bit. But I think for some kids, like there is some value in hearing those voices and those words, and they learn a lot from it. So I just think, you know, keep it managed and don't worry about it too much.
Yeah. I freaked out about it too with Bear constantly. I was in the same boat as Liz, like trying to just control as much as I could. He watches TV now, and I will say he watches probably a little bit every day, and it's for the same reason that Liz has. Like, we get home from school, I'm trying to, like, get dinner done, and he can play on his own, too, by himself, but sometimes it's not the case, and I have two now, and she doesn't really care about the TV being on either. But I think something that I read and something you kind of alluded to is the quality of the shows that you're watching makes a huge difference. So, like, he was watching this show. My God, it was the most god-awful show. And I didn't even realize what it was, which it was my fault. But it was called Masha and the Bear. It's on Netflix. Have you seen it? Has anyone seen
it? No.
Okay, oh my God. It's about this little girl. It's Russian. And this bear. And she just, like, whines. And she's, like, sneaky. And the bear just, like, takes all of her, like, crap, basically. And Tim, my husband, was like, did you, he like showed me this article and he's like, they're saying this Masha and the Bear show is worse than SpongeBob. Because for a long time, like they were saying wow. SpongeBob was like the ultimate, like terrible thing for kids to watch. And so I was like, oh my God, he watches this.
Before
like,
that, it was probably Ren and Stimpy.
Probably. Oh yeah. Those just obnoxious shows that have literally no benefit whatsoever. But so anyways, what I had read after that point, it's better if you can watch a show, and obviously it's better if you can watch it together, but like you were saying, Liz, like if it has something like, what's one show that he likes to watch, like Wild Kratts, it's like they're talking about animals and they're learning something, mm-hmm. and like you can converse about it like afterwards, even after the fact, like it can be educational for them and it can be helpful. And so I think it just really depends on what are you using the TV for? Like how often yeah. are you, like how much are you using it? How long are you using it? Because it's, again, it's just, we have screens everywhere. And so
I kind of think the other screens are worse than the TV as well. Like to kind of piggyback on what you're saying, because with the TV, they'll watch it. It'll be interesting to them for a while. They'll get something from it and then they'll kind of get sick of not using their hands mm-hmm. and not, you know, moving around. So that's generally what happens with us after a little while. She just wants to get up and do something else. But with the iPads, like I feel like those are kind of in case of emergency only mm-hmm. type things, like airplane rides or like really like desperate situations, because when they've got this in front of their face, like six inches from their face, and they're using their hands and messing with it, I think that's when it turns from like engagement to like almost obsessive behavior,
yeah. mm-hmm.
which I have no proof of that at all, other than to say like, I see it's a lot harder to tear kids away from an iPad than it is from the television.
I totally 100% agree. Bear can watch an episode of television on the TV and we can say, okay, it's time to turn it off. Like we've watched one episode, like that's it. He's fine. With the iPad, he's literally full on glued to it. He will fight tooth and nail to get away from it. And again, like I never thought of it that way, but it's like he is obsessed with it and
yeah,
it's crazy. Just kind of his reaction to it. Yeah. But, and the
some
more
kind of reward syndrome with yeah. like swiping. I don't know.
Seriously. And then, cause I am writing that article or the blog on infant sleep. And so one of my things, like for you particularly with like infants, one of the main things I would say, and I was guilty of this with Bear, is like when I was nursing at night, you know, getting up like three or four times a night, like I would grab my phone and, you know, mm-hmm. their baby's right here, the blue light's right there. And I feel like not only is that like disrupting your circadian rhythms and your melatonin production and to do that like several times at night. But I feel like at that point, if you're trying to establish, you know, a normal circadian rhythm in your baby, some of that light that's just kind of ambient and getting in their eyes, because their eyes are perceiving it, I feel like you could be kind of hindering the development of, you know, normal sleep patterns in that case. So one of my main things would just be like, truly, like, don't pick up your phone at night. Like talking like middle of the night, you know what I mean? So I don't know. That's my
I have a strict rule where we leave our phones out in the living room, and I got a warm light, amber light little thing that you like, bunk, and it turns just enough light on for me to see if she's latched.
Right.
And so that I think has been really great for me, because she will wake up and eat for 20 minutes maybe, and then like I am immediately out as soon as she falls asleep.
Yeah.
Whereas if like earlier I would have my phone in there, and then it takes a lot longer to wind back down.
I think that's really
huge.
Even if you have like the filter over your phone, like it still activates something when you're like,
when you're reading stuff and interacting with people and or Googling. Like, oh my gosh, possibly do.
That's all I did. I was too obsessed over things to not do that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think my friend Jordan Hofing, from A Thriving Mom, she and I were like on Facebook Messenger all night, cause we were both up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and it was so helpful to me to like have somebody to connect with during that time. So like, yeah, we know what's probably optimal. It doesn't mean we're going to do it, and that's okay. Because everything is shiftable. I think I probably messed up my kid's circadian rhythms when she was really little, because we actually slept with an amber light on. And I don't think that...
I do, too. I keep that little thing on, but I put like a bark cloth over it. And I just want... I want to be able to roll and see her and see where her face is, make sure it's not covered, make sure to see if her eyes are open or closed, like all that stuff.
Totally. I'm writing the article, and I'm literally saying, like, use a blue light or a light that's like this. Don't sleep with the light on. But like, thinking back, it's like when she was really little, like I did the same thing. It's like nothing is irreversible to a certain extent, as far as like sleep habits. Like, it's like, do what you have to do to survive what feels right. But like, it's not like, I mean, it's going to be okay. Just like everything is, it's going to be fine.
It's gonna be okay. The fact that we're worried about this stuff is signifies that we're doing all right, I think, in the first place.
Agreed.
All right. That's our last question. We didn't quite keep it under an hour, but
this is pretty good. We did pretty good.
We did. And I think people will actually want to listen to this whole episode, because it was jam-packed with some awesome information. So that's it. You guys have anything
else?
I'm excited, too.
No, I will say, kind of in reference back, it's talking about parenting, or in reference back to the original podcast, I was on mute for about like, she cried for like two minutes at one point when I was on mute, and then just zink, straight on. It was really sweet. It makes me
so
smile.
Sweet.
She gets to cry and tell her it's okay.
She can fall asleep.
Yeah. And then she fell asleep, and now she's just right here, just staring at me.
Aww.
And it's adorable.
Love it.
Thanks for that, Liz, and for Jess too, for like talking about all this. And I know I'm taking as much from this as our listeners are.
Yeah, totally. Awesome. And if that's one thing I feel like we can put out there, it's like, yes, we have a lot of information. We're not experts by any means, and we're also not perfect. Like, God, like I'm not perfect. And if you can just accept that about yourself and like realize that you're going to learn as you go and learn from other people along the way, like, gosh, you will be so much better off in parenting. I feel like hard lesson learned for me.
Give yourself grace and give other mamas grace. And I think that's the whole point of this podcast, is to give information, but not judge.
Absolutely.
Or try not to.
Cool. Okay.
Thanks, guys. We appreciate those.
Yeah. So,
and coming.
Yeah, as always, if you want to go on iTunes, rate us and write a review. We appreciate it. We read every single one. We've talked about that before. It just like gives us all the feels. But you can find us on social media at laura.radicalroots and at jess.holdthespace.
And Liz, you want to tell everyone where they can find
tell,
you?
Yeah, tell us where we can
they
find
you. They probably already know, but...
I wouldn't assume that. Realfoodliz.com and realfoodliz on all the social media channels, mostly on Instagram these days.
The best.
It is the best.
Were you ever on the snaps?
I was on the snaps maybe twice.
Yeah.
I could, but I started using Instagram stories, which feel like they're the same thing.
They are very similar. Yeah. I love your stories a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah.
The back of my kid's head.
I love seeing the back of your kid's head. awesome. Really? So yeah, find Liz. We'll have all this in the show notes. We'll be waiting with bated breath on the baby making and beyond. Wow. That was a lot of alliteration. Bated breath with the baby making and beyond.
Alliteration is my favorite. And we will link to where you can go sign up to get notified when it is ready to rock too.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, we will see you guys next week and we'll talk to you soon.
Ciao.
Bye.
Bye guys. Bye. Thanks, Liz.